Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Joining us for this post-argument episode of SCOTUScast, Partisan Gerrymandering Edition. I'm your host, Bridget Flaherty. On October 3, 2017, the Supreme Court heard argument in Gill v. Whitford, a case involving claims of partisan gerrymandering. In Wisconsin's 2010 elections, Republicans won the governorship and acquired control of the state Senate. In 2011, the Wisconsin legislature adopted a redistricting plan, Act 43, for state legislative districts. With Act 43 in effect, Republicans expanded their legislative control in subsequent elections, reportedly winning 60 of 99 seats in the state assembly, with 48.6% of the statewide two-party vote in 2012, and 63 of 99 seats, with 52% of the statewide two-party vote in 2014. In 2015, 12 Wisconsin voters sued in federal court, alleging that Act 43 constituted a statewide partisan gerrymander in violation of the First and 14th Amendments to the U.S. Constitution. Defendants' motions to dismiss and for summary judgment were denied, and following trial, a divided three-judge district court panel invalidated Act 43 statewide. Act 43, the majority concluded, impermissibly burdened the representational rights of Democratic voters by impeding their ability to translate their votes into legislative seats, even when Republicans were in an electoral minority. The court enjoined further use of Act 43 and ordered that a remedial redistricting plan be enacted, but the United States Supreme Court stayed that judgment pending resolution of this appeal. The questions before the Supreme Court are as follows. 1. Whether the district court, in holding that it had the authority to entertain a statewide challenge to Wisconsin's redistricting plan, instead of requiring a district-by-district analysis, ran afoul of the Supreme Court's 2004 decision in Veith v. Jubilurer. 2. Whether the district court violated Veith when it held that Wisconsin's redistricting plan was an impermissible partisan gerrymander, even though it was undisputed that the plan complies with traditional redistricting principles. 3. Whether the district court violated Veith by adopting a watered-down version of the partisan gerrymandering test employed by the plurality in the Supreme Court's 1986 decision in Davis v. Vandemer. 4. Whether the defendants are entitled to present additional evidence showing that they would have prevailed under the district court's test, which the court announced only after the record had closed. And 5. Whether partisan gerrymandering claims are justiciable. And now, to discuss the case, we have David Cazaza, associate at Gibson Dunn.
Gill v. Whitford presents the question of whether partisan gerrymandering claims are justiciable. Now, start with the background on gerrymandering. Gerrymandering is when the members of a legislature or other politicians who are in control of drawing the lines for legislative districts draw them in a way to favor one group over another. And in a partisan gerrymandering claim, the assertion is that the map drawers have made maps to favor their party at the expense of the opposing party. In this case, the plaintiffs are Democrats from Wisconsin who argue that the Republicans controlling the legislature and governorship in Wisconsin violated the Constitution by drawing lines that will result in the election of Republicans rather than Democrats. Now, it's an open question whether the Constitution imposes limits on how much a party can favor their party in districting. The Supreme Court, on several occasions, has considered this in the past and hasn't really come to a clear answer. In Davis v. Vandemer, decided in 1986, the court suggested that there are limits and that these cases are justiciable, but the court wasn't able to agree on what standard to apply or how to decide whether a map was a constitutional violation or permissible. About 20 years later, in a case called Veith v. Jubilurer, the Supreme Court returned to the question. A plurality of the court said that these cases were not justiciable at all, there was no constitutional standard to apply, and there was nothing to decide. Four justices in dissent argued that the cases were justiciable, and Justice Kennedy, the deciding vote, said that he didn't think the plan at issue in that case was a constitutional violation, and he also wasn't convinced that a manageable standard had been presented to the court, but he wasn't willing to foreclose the possibility that one would emerge in the future. What's particularly important for the current case is that Justice Kennedy's concurring opinion in Veef suggested that future plaintiffs should shape their claim not as a 14th Amendment equal protection challenge, but as a First Amendment challenge, arguing that partisan gerrymandering against them interfered with their First Amendment rights to free political association. The plaintiffs in Gill latched onto that and argued in their complaint below, before the three-judge district court, and here, that they have a combined constitutional violation, that Wisconsin's district map violated both their First Amendment rights and also their 14th Amendment equal protection rights. Questions at the Supreme Court, though, before getting to the merits, began with a preliminary question of standing. Justice Kennedy jumped in with the first question and asked Misha Zaitlin, the Solicitor General of Wisconsin, whether a First Amendment challenge presented a different standing question than a 14th Amendment challenge. This is important because racial gerrymandering cases, which are 14th and 15th Amendment challenges, cannot be brought on a statewide basis. Plaintiffs are limited to challenging the district in which they live because the injury they suffer is their inability to elect their own representative. If the same reasoning applies in partisan gerrymandering cases, this case will easily be resolved in Wisconsin's favor because the plaintiffs have brought challenges to the statewide map and not exclusively to the districts in which they live. Justice Kennedy's questions, though, seem to suggest that he thinks a First Amendment challenge presents a different standing framing than a 14th Amendment challenge. And, as Justice Kagan pointed out later in questioning, in one-person, one-vote cases, plaintiffs are permitted to bring a statewide challenge rather than a district-by-district challenge. So this may come down to whether the analogy is drawn to race-based cases or one-person, one-vote cases. And, as with so many things, it will likely come down to how Justice Kennedy views the question. Once the court proceeded to the merits in their questioning, the only clear thing was that there wasn't much clarity to be found. Justice Alito, Chief Justice Roberts, and Justice Gorsuch all expressed significant skepticism that any standard could be found to decide these cases. Their questions were skeptical and critical of the new sociological and political science measures and different metrics that were presented by the plaintiffs in this case. One, the efficiency gap has gotten a lot of play in the press. It's an attempt to try to measure the number of wasted votes cast for each party by looking at all of the votes cast for a losing candidate and the votes over the margin of victory for a winning candidate on a statewide basis, on the presumption that if one party is wasting significantly more votes than another party, the map is discriminating against the first. The other metric that got discussed a fair amount in oral argument is partisan symmetry, which looks at what would happen if both parties won a particular percentage of the vote. So if Republicans won 54% of the vote and attained 60 seats, if Democrats won 54% of the vote, would they also be able to obtain 60 seats? In the district court below, the plaintiffs and the court focused largely on the efficiency gap, using that metric as a new way to measure partisan gerrymandering. But in the Supreme Court, it was partisan asymmetry that got a lot more play. The court didn't seem particularly receptive to the efficiency gap, and at least some of the conservative justices were skeptical that these measures were helpful at all. Chief Justice Roberts referred to them as sociological gobbledygook. His colleagues disagreed, of course, but they didn't seem to be able to clearly articulate a unifying standard either. Justice Breyer looked at these metrics and proposed a five-part test assessing whether there was unified partisan control, the amount of partisan asymmetry, the range of partisan asymmetry over a number of different vote totals, the severity of the partisan asymmetry, and whether there were alternative justifications for the map. Justice Ginsburg, on the other hand, seemed focused on the extent to which the map created a disincentive to vote. Justice Sotomayor was concerned about the discriminatory intent of the legislature. And Justice Kennedy, during questions of Wisconsin and Aaron Murphy, who was arguing for the Wisconsin legislature, seemed concerned about the amount of invidious intent that the legislature had and the extent to which partisan motives predominated over nonpartisan motives. The two takeaways from all of this are, first, that as much as the plaintiffs tried to give a concise test to the court to assuage their concerns that this would be unmanageable for lower courts in the future, they struggled to do so, and the justices showed no signs of having a clear agreement on what the standard should be. Second, given the hype in the press about the efficiency gap, it was surprising how little that played out in oral argument. The focus was much more on partisan asymmetry and on the level of discriminatory intent, not on the efficiency gap itself. So where does this leave us? Prognostication is a risky business, and it's particularly risky when it's Justice Kennedy's vote that you're trying to predict. Now, it's possible that some 13 years after Veith, Justice Kennedy has decided that he has found the magical metric that he wants to decide partisan gerrymandering cases. On the other hand, the Chief Justice is certainly going to be arguing to him, as he did during oral argument, that a ruling holding these cases justiciable will just mire the Supreme Court and district courts in an unending stream of political litigation. The Chief Justice was very concerned that the perception of the court would be injured by people looking at these decisions and saying that a group of Republican justices or a group of Democratic justices reached a particular outcome because it favored Democrats or Republicans. This is in keeping with the Chief Justice's general concern for the institutional integrity and reputation of the court. On the other hand, Justice Kennedy didn't have any questions for Paul Smith, who was arguing for the plaintiffs. That could suggest that he's favoring their argument, or it could be that he was willing to let his colleagues take the lead in that questioning. If there are 5 votes on the Supreme Court willing to say that these cases are justiciable and that this is an unconstitutional partisan gerrymander, I don't think it's very likely that there will be a coherent standard announced. Justices Breyer and Kennedy seem to view this very differently, and Justices Kagan, Sotomayor, and Ginsburg may be able to get an agreement, but I doubt they could unite 5 votes behind a single opinion. That would leave courts more or less where they were after Bandemer, which said these cases can be decided, but refused to provide a standard. That left district courts without any guidance and led to a lot of messy litigation that I'm sure the conservatives will be eager to avoid. The easy out, of course, would be a ruling on standing, saying that plaintiffs can only bring a district-by-district challenge and that these plaintiffs improperly brought a challenge on a statewide basis. Regardless of how oral argument went, it's promising for Wisconsin that Justice Kennedy was willing to vote earlier this spring in favor of the state on its stay application. This left in place the current maps, which are allegedly a partisan gerrymander. Votes on stays are very often indicative of final votes on the merits. But we won't know for sure what's going to happen until the Supreme Court releases its opinions.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.